tweeted, as you're arriving in Washington, D.C., I left my home in Florida to escape a tyrannical governor who sent police to raid my home for publishing COVID stats, only to arrive in D.C. as armed terrorists storm Congress trying to overturn the election by threatening to hold Congress hostage. What has that been like for you in this last 30 seconds?
I start to feel that trouble just follows me, or I follow it no matter where I go, which is actually, I think, the first line of my book. But yeah, it just seems like we're in a world that's in disarray. Everything is discombobulated, and no one seems to want to take responsibility for how their actions have impacted our society and our culture and our politics. And it is pervasive. It is everywhere. It's here in D.C. It's in Florida. It's at the highest levels of government, literally, in this country. And I'm just in shock that everywhere in this country is experiencing this kind of sickness of the soul.
Rebecca Jones, and we're going to have to leave it there, but we will continue to talk to you, we hope, in the future. Founder of Florida COVID Action, data scientist and whistleblower. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Wearing a mask is an act of love.
This is Norma Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. Meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
Tune into KBOO for Bridge Over Troubled Water, a tribute to the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Monday, January the 18th from noon to 5:30 p.m. This retrospective program honors Dr. King's work through a combination of archives, audio, and contemporary interviews, featuring artists, activists, public officials, and community members who have participated in this event over the years. Bridge Over Troubled Waters draws inspiration from Dr. King's mission to ensure peace, social justice, civil rights, and human dignity for all. Again, that's Bridge Over Troubled Water, a tribute to the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, on Monday, January the 18th, from noon to 5:30 p.m., here on Community Radio, KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Friday. Mind the gap, because we're going to bridge it. Stay tuned.
Hello and good morning, Portland and the universe. How's it going? I'm Tammy. This is The Gap. On the line with me is one of my co-hosts, Althea Billings. How are you, Althea?
Hello. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm well. A little winded per usual, but nothing that a little sip of coffee can't help. Excuse me, help with. In studio, as always, is our trusted sound engineer, commentator. I have so many adjectives. I don't know which one to pick from. Sonia, how are you, Sonia?
Good morning.
Nice to have you all here. Another week here in 2021. We're here.
Is it still the first week? We just passed 7 days. Wow. All right.
Yeah. Exactly.
We did it,
yeah.
You guys. First week. Did anything important happen?
That's been pretty quiet, hasn't it?
That's sarcasm. Real sarcasm. I just want to be really clear.
I just started this new TV show, and I'm really excited about the finale. It's called America, And I think that the part two of the finale is going to be on the 20th. So that seems exciting, watching that unfold.
Yeah, a lot to look forward to, the 20th.
And yeah, that's going to be kind of our line of conversation today. Obviously, what's been happening, the Capitol, the riots, Georgia, Ted Wheeler getting swatted. I mean, a lot of things have been happening. This is, wasn't a simple week. I mean, we weren't going to let 2020 think that it can be 2021, I guess, is what's happening here, right?
Yeah, it's a race out the gate, apparently, of how many bad things can happen in a given 365 days. So,
I'd say 2021 inherited a mess, as they say.
That's true.
It's December 39th.
Exactly.
It doesn't feel like that.
I feel bad because usually they, like, isn't there, like, iconography that imagines, like, 2021 as a baby and 2020 is, like, an old man that's like, okay, you take the sash, you're the year now, and I feel bad for this poor baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah,
that's the whole Rankin-Bass stop-motion thing about the baby new year.
Yeah, baby new year, that's what I'm thinking of.
The thing is, there's this giant buzzard that was like, the embodiment of something or other. And the turning of the year basically destroys him, turns him into ice and snow, and so he kidnaps the baby New Year. So Rudolph and Yukon Cornelius and Herbie the elf, whose dream was to be
a dentist.
Yes, exactly, that guy. And that's so we have like Heat Miser and
on recall.
Yeah.
Is this real? I mean, like, obviously, is this like a fable, like a famous fable of the world?
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Messrs. Rankin at Bass may have had a hand, may have, like, taken some liberties with a few established folklore characters.
I buy it. I don't know if you're selling it, who's selling it, I'm buying it. I like it. It sounds I mean, maybe I'll finish with my psychological mind thriller that is America. and then after that, that sounds like a really nice way to dive into a fairy tale of magical land. Which, I don't know, I'm still kind of a disbelief watching the news, so maybe, like, I've been finding myself having to, like, ground myself more than usual, where usually I do enjoy, like, anything that isn't reality. Mm-hmm. But that was great, Tonya. I love that story. I was sitting here like, what? He stole the baby?
The buzzer? No way. Yeah, yesterday morning I woke up and I feel like I had a stress hangover. I had a headache and was feeling rattled.
Rattled. Interesting. Mm. Because we've also been seeing kind of the I guess, little nuggets of pockets of violence, both in Salem and in Olympia. Was mm-hmm. that you were mentioning yesterday?
Yeah, in Olympia, stormed the governor's mansion in Olympia.
My goodness. Well, you know, I guess this would be a good time as ever to get started on our like three piece pie.
Yum.
Just kind of trying to understand the current, like the chain of events that led to the riots on the 6th, and it started, I guess it was, you know, you could say it started off with the runoff elections in Georgia, which the Democrats won, and I mean, even just doing like a tiny little, not even a deep dive, doing like a little kiddie pool swim into the whole Georgia election itself is just is really interesting, because they had contenders that were either completely, you know, not attached to the people and the constituents, like Loeffler and Perdue, I guess, has a background in politics, but Warnock, they got it. He got it.
Warnock and Ossoff got it done.
They got it done. Well, and the grassroots, the grassroots organizations got it done. And also, I give Trump a little bit of credit for letting, for, I mean, he just really dropped the ball for lack of better words, when it came to like standing behind his fellow Republican Party, candidates. He really didn't. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say there was going to be a particular spin that would need to be made in order to talk out of both sides of your mouth and say, well, the election is fake and it's rigged, but also vote for these guys, please, so that I can, so that maybe I stay in power, right? Like, it's a delicate balance, and, he's not known as being a delicate orator.
Yes, I think that I agree with you. Nothing in the last 40 years that Trump has been like a public figure has he shown to be a delicate person at all. And this did have, how are you going to, just be very outspoken about how it was all a sham, and then in the same token say, but vote for Karen Loeffler and say like the wrong name instead of Kelly, which was her actual name. Disenfranchised. I think that most people that run for politics have a thing called like party loyalty, and I just don't think that we've just been seeing Trumpism, which is a lot of people way smarter than I am have been talking about it, but this is definitely like one of those points where we saw that happen and how it affected him negatively, or not him, it affected the party negatively, because now, Democrats have it all. They have a flush, full house. I don't know which one is the actual. I'm not a poker gamer, but, they have a full house and a goldfish and all of that.
I see a tactic at play here.
Uno reverse.
Oh, go ahead, Sonia.
Trump's power isn't in anything. His power is in the demagogue, right? His power is all about delegitimizing all the official institutions and placing all his followers' hopes and aspirations and ambitions in him. So it works to his advantage to see, he's saying from the beginning, the only way we'll lose is if it's rigged. So saying that the institutions are no good, put no faith and no trust and put no stock in the institutions, it's all me. So
yeah,
then it's to his advantage to lose elections, because in the eyes of that fits the narrative that all the systems are against him and by extension against his base, riling them up. So like every time their guy doesn't win, it's because the system is out to keep them down. And which leads to a storming of the Bastille, as we saw on Tuesday.
Do you think that just the way that, the fact of just the current reality that we're living in, has that environment been, just like the culture wars and COVID and the economy, and, student debt, the climate, all the stuff that we've kind of been dealing with, even like a little bit before Trump, do you think that he just kind of like, there was distrust in the institutions for a while, and I wonder, and I'd like to get your opinion, if you think that he took advantage of it, or do you think that he like created more distrust, like created more of a reason for that, because he ran on I'm not in the establishment, and like I don't know, do you think that at some point he used the fact that he was president to be like, look, I'm on the inside, I'm telling you it's really that bad, or do you think he just like manipulated the situation?
Yes.
All right. All right, there's that.
It's like, so what after, he did was, the thing is,
go ahead.
His whole thing was, is the premise of Trump's premise is more or less true. You know, all the institutions are rigged against us.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and so he took that and said, and I can save you. And because his only opposition was the mascot, the face of the previous 25 years of screwing over the workers for the benefit of the elites, it worked. Because his opposition didn't, his only opposition, his anointed opposition, didn't manipulated an already rigged game to force out the only person who was the only other candidate that was speaking to what Trump was manipulating for his own gain. And, you know, people who would have voted for that other candidate saw that.
Do you mean Bernie? Are we not saying his name for, can we not say his name or something?
Okay, sure. Clinton.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. Don't get crazy now. I'm kidding.
Clinton pulled strings to force Sanders out of the nomination, force Sanders out of the nomination. The only other verbs I can think of, we're not going to say at this time of day. And
thank you.
Yeah, and it, people saw that. The people who wouldn't have voted for either of them anyway saw that, and it just confirmed for them everything Trump was saying.
Yeah, I think that at some point or another, you know, when it goes to Trump, I think our memories are so short. Like, when I watch the documentaries about him, I'm like, what? We've known all this since the 80s, 70s? Why are we pretending like we didn't know this then? So I think, like, at some point, maybe we should do some sort of, like, what was, you know, just like a pre-Trump and how did we get to it type of, like, rundown, because you're right. Bernie, I think that at this point, Bernie has definitely taken, like, a different role within the DNC, and I don't think he'll probably ever be running again. But going back to Georgia, we digress, although that's, you know, all related to it. So we have the Democrats are in. And then, so that was its own, had its own obstacles. And then I guess it was later that day, there was a rally in Washington, D.C. And, we all saw what happened. Giuliani spoke. I think Trump Jr. spoke. The President Trump spoke as well. And it was right after that the marching towards the Capitol started. And then the violence and riots and storming the castle started. Althea, I'd like to get your take on that escalation. And I know that you were on Twitter looking at things through the Twitter lens. I'd love to hear your take on it.
Yeah, I was following things through a list on Twitter of just, like, D.C. reporters who were, you know, knew that this rally was coming. And then there's also, like, the reporters who are inside the Capitol, because the whole reason that they wanted to go to the Capitol at all was because Congress was voting ceremonially to certify the presidential electoral votes. There were a few senators and over 100 House of Representatives members who intended to contest the results that there were in Arizona and in Pennsylvania. And then a whole bunch of, speeches going on about how even though, to be clear, again, even if you, like, voter fraud is not a serious problem in this country. It is not a serious problem in this election. And even if you took every case that is a little, is like questionable from the right, and all of them have been tossed out of court, even if you take all of them, it doesn't come up to a margin that would allow it to matter, that would change the results of the Electoral College, that will that would have President Trump win. And so Trump tells his people, go to the Capitol, and somehow, mind-bogglingly, in my opinion, they made their way in. They tear gassed and pepper sprayed the cops. The cops didn't even have, the Capitol Police didn't have riot gear on. And this is a building that has not been taken in any capacity since the War of 1812, since it was Britain. And now there's the photos are like appalling of, you know, people walking through the halls with Confederate flags. The Confederate flag has never been flown in the Capitol building. They never got closer than, I forget which fort it is, but they never got close enough. Like, the Confederacy never made it to Congress. So yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about. If listeners want to call in, we'd love to hear your take on the Capitol siege, on the Georgia runoff elections, on counting down the days until January 20th. We would love to hear from you. So give us a call, 503-231-8187. Obviously, there's a lot of different perspectives to consider about why this is bad. Bad feels like such a lukewarm word to describe.
What's madness.
Like, hey, guys, it's bad. Hey, are you guys seeing this? It seems kind of bad to me. No, it's absolute lunacy.
He did nothing. He did everything short of ordering the Uber for people, and he's like, just make a left on yeah. Georgia Ave, and you know. Oh,
speaking
make
of
a
giving
right
directions,
15.
Did you
yeah,
notice like? Did speaking of giving directions, did you notice how like Capitol Police were telling armed insurgents exactly where people's offices were, specific offices?
I didn't notice that specifically, but
you know, going back to the pictures you're mentioning with the mace and all, I didn't know who was law enforcement and who was a rider. I was like, this, I can't even
well,
tell y'all.
Again, like, yes,
just the same.
You know that meme of like two Spider-Mans pointing at each other?
Yeah, it's got that energy for sure. Well, and then now there's momentum in Congress to try to remove Trump before Inauguration Day, either with the 25th Amendment, which would require the cabinet, which now at least two secretaries have resigned, which is like, don't resign now when you actually have power to do something. You're like, oh, this is the line. It's like, now's the line? This was the line for you?
Maybe the line is now they'll be expected to actually do, actually, now that there's actual pressure for them to
take some kind of stand.
To take, yeah. They're running away when it's time for them to actually do something. And meanwhile, you know, cabinet positions are about making our lives, the way we've set up our society, possible. So who's running these departments now if all these people are resigning?
I would say not the Capitol Police chief, because they resigned the day after. So that's a, you know, if anyone is looking for a job in D.C., I guess, I don't know if they'd take remote, but that position is definitely available. Go ahead.
Do they cover relocation?
I'm on a Zoom call with the Capitol Police giving the...
I mean, that's what it felt like. It's like, yeah. It's what it looked like. We'd love to get your take on the situation, both on the Georgia election, what happened at the Capitol, the riots. We didn't even talk about the swatting of Ted Wheeler. Our phone number is 503-231-8187. Again, 503-231-8187. You're listening to The Gap on KBOO Portland. I'm Tammy. On the line with me is Althea, and in studio, you know, amplifying our voices into the airwaves is Sonia. We're talking about Georgia, what happened at the Capitol, the riots, the swatting. I mean, poof. It just, yeah. I didn't even, my phone was just hot. It said, stop it. I can't take it anymore.
Yeah. It's just gone from bad to worse. I was going to I had a quip about cabinet secretaries. If you'll remember, those seats were vacant for, like, the first year that Trump was in office because he didn't, like, nominate anybody. Not that I think that, you know, in the next 12 days, Betsy DeVos is going to be sorely missed. You know, she already destroyed Title IX and gave so much funding to charter schools. So, I don't know. But I feel like there was this attitude, right, after the election was called and Republicans weren't saying, like, okay, yep, it's Biden. Everybody move on. We've got an inauguration to plan, you know. But they would say to the media anonymously, it's like, yeah, we know he lost, but, like, what's the harm in, like, you know, not saying that right away? And I feel like this is a wonderful case of, no, you should definitely say that. Like, there is harm to be done by playing these fantasy games with the president and, by extension, his supporters. And it's that, and as, you know, Tammy and Sonia were talking about earlier about how President Trump has hijacked the Republican Party not to be one that has a particular set of, like, priorities or values, but one that is based around whatever Trump says is good. And the people are so, like, terrified of getting primaried, of not getting reelected. Like, I think we might see a Republican schism here.
Oh, we're schismed out. Everything between everyone is schismed out. We're one step away from being that barbarian that was wearing, like, the Chewbacca costume at the Capitol. I think it was a very strong imagery. We are totally turning into, like, these tribal sects, and it's, you know, it's sad. And then the thing, and, like, all of this is happening, and I'm seeing, like, all of these flags that aren't American flags. We're seeing Q flags, you know, like you said, you're seeing Confederate flags and all of that stuff. And then, out of nowhere, Trump tweets, you know, go home. But the way that he does it is, like, just so, I love you, see you, bye. See you later, love you, take care.
The video.
Are you trying to get off the phone with your mom, or are you trying to tell these rioters that are burning down the city that they need to leave? Like, what are you doing?
Very so vaguely alludes that they need to leave. Go
while
now.
Still saying,
go in peace. You're very special. We love you.
Like, although it's a sham, this is all lies, but go in peace. After you just, during the rally, you know, Giuliani was saying, you know, they're saying words like violence and, you know, like.
Yeah, did Giuliani say, like, let's punch it out and see who wins? That was what he said at that rally.
It's just unbelievable. I was wondering about whether I should, you know, grab some audio clips for the show, but I don't know. It just seems like not. It's like too soon, you know. I mean, maybe in a little bit, you know, we can look at it in hindsight a little bit more of a, you know, not like a more healthy perspective. Because right now it's like just in. It's maddening, and it's you know, it's not to see so many people. And I'm from DC, so it was crazy to see that, like. I know that anyone who's, like, you know, every inch of D.C. is, like, under surveillance. There's, you know, you go get a salad and there's probably, like, an FBI agent or something in the room with you, and it's just very normative. And, you know, D.C. is known to have protests since, you know, forever. And just their response is so, the response was just, I don't understand why you're acting like you don't know what to do. And Mayor Bowser did say that she doesn't want there to be as much police presence because, you know, they're getting a lot of flack for the protests during the summertime, just like, you know, how Portland was getting a lot of flack for the protests here. And but it's just, I don't, you know, like Sonia, when we were talking yesterday, you're saying to compare the two, you know, movements or whatever is not a you know, reliable thing to do because it's just not.
It's one dishonest. The two.
It's dishonest.
We're not talking about. I used a college word. I said conflate. It means to portray two different things, to portray two things as if they are the same or comparable, or like rather than, you know, that they and merit a similar response. You know, unarmed families do not merit the same police response as thousands of people carrying assault rifles.
And to the point where you cannot tell who is a cop and who is a civilian. And macing, I mean, sheesh. There, you know, macing a cop is, that's how, and there were, what, I think that we're at 13 arrests. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. How?
13 arrests 13 day of. I think there's been more since then. And
oh,
people,
wow.
Because the photos are all over social media, there's a deal.
And social media doesn't want the people that were there to post them, but there's still a bunch of social media pictures of it, like from screenshots and screen grabs.
Yeah, but I mean, even just like a shallow dive, you can like find these people on Facebook and stuff.
Or you can go through. You can just go through the weeks and months of internet and social media posts with everyone who was, you know, planning this. It's mm-hmm. all right there. It was right there in public. This was all the plots for this were out loud and in public. There's no secret. It's not hard to find these people. It wasn't hard to find them on Tuesday. Everyone knew where they were, and they stayed there for hours on end. There's no way the FBI couldn't have gotten there, surrounded the place, and then just arrested people as Capitol Police and Metro PD were gently walking them out that evening. There's no reason that couldn't have happened, but for some reason it didn't. What are your thoughts,
you know,
listeners? 503-231-8187.
You know, seeing all that ammunition and guns and power, I was really happy that it did not end up with more casualties, because it definitely had the ingredients for a tulismic disaster. These aren't, you know, like you said, these aren't like necessarily families and stuff. You know, some are veterans and some are like, you know, I mean, there are a lot of guns, you know. So I am happy that there was at least like some sort of mediation, because excess force could have been used, although there was a casualty. Someone got shot in the Capitol. Like, that's unnerving. And you see, you know, I have a lot of friends in different countries, and they're like, what's going on? And they don't say this necessarily because they don't see this type of stuff in their countries. And, you know, in a lot of countries, you know, it wouldn't be, you know, rubber bullets or tear gas. It would be live ammunition. So, you know, there is that to say. So it's not like it's the most horrible thing they've ever seen, but the fact of that it is America and it is the Capitol and it's the Speaker of the House, and it's like they were very concerned, you know? And then Canada getting on their high horse talking about, we condemn this violence. They're just waiting for this, I'm telling you. Trudeau's just waiting and with a stationery trying to one-up America, but that was a joke.
And of course this all has to be dealt with still. You know, this coup isn't over yet.
Oh, no, yeah.
It's not over until the ringleaders have been brought to justice. And, God, I was going somewhere else with that, and I lost it. Well,
you know how it's going to go, right? Of all of the things that Trump did, it's going to be the taxes that get him.
Like
the IRS got Al Capone, you know?
I know, right? It's like in a year and a half from now, it's like the IRS knocks on his door and they're like, so about that $700 that you paid in federal taxes, what's up? Like, we don't forget. We don't forgive. Oof, don't mess with the IRS. Never.
Absolutely not.
Big ups. Thanks for that stimmy. Just kidding. Love y'all. Just kidding. You're fine.
12 more days till maybe the $2,000.
Oh,
Senate
my
Minority
God,
Leader Mitch McConnell. Speak that.
I know. Big switches. Big switches. And I'm telling a lot of people are getting new business cards. I'm telling you. If anyone out there would like to join in on the conversation, we'd love to hear your take. 503-231-8187.
Guess who we've got on the line right now?
I don't know. We have a caller. Is it Harry?
It is. Go ahead, Harry. You're live.
Okay. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Protect Trump, but I listened to his speech in the White House, but you know, to the rally that he had. And he says, we will walk to the Capitol. And he didn't say, that's all he said, walk to the Capitol. So
stop, hold on. He said, we will walk to the Capitol after saying, if I lose, it's because everyone but me cheated and is a liar and is out to screw you over. So, if we're gonna say anything about what Trump said that day, we have to consider it in the context of the previous several months. So, go on.
Yeah, okay. But he said, we'll just walk. And he didn't say anything about attacking the Capitol building or anything like that. He didn't, second, he didn't walk with them. I thought he was probably going to walk with them. So I asked Google, how far is it from the White House to the Capitol? It's 2.3 miles. So, they knew. I can't believe the government didn't know, because I mean, it was a rally, so there was probably police right there. They should have contacted the Capitol building. Hey, these people are coming. They should have been really blamed the police and the Capitol, the Capitol police, and for not doing anything, because they knew they were there. There were thousands there in front of the White House. So there was police there, but they didn't do anything. They just watched them go all the way to the Capitol.
All right, Harry, we've kind of spoken to all of this already, and it's well established. It's well established that the police were. It wasn't so much that a lack of preparedness by the police so much as the police were kept from being properly prepared. And the response was the police response planning was throttled from the very beginning. And so to treat these points to bring up such questions if they haven't already been settled isn't really useful or helpful and doesn't move any kind of discussion or analysis along in any useful way. Thank you for your call.
I had one thing to say, though, Harry. It did bring up something for me, which
okay.
I think is worth talking about, and I'm glad you brought it up, is that the part of the police response has to do with the fact that D.C. isn't a state. And so, you know, the Capitol Police are, you know, charged with the building, but the D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser had requested ahead of this rally that the D.C. Guard be brought in to give support, and some of them were, but it wasn't like a lot of them, and some of them were off duty. I don't know. So I think the entire narrative of what exactly happened will come out as the days go by, but she doesn't have the authority to call out the D.C. Guard, you know. It's actually the president's authority. He's the one that makes that call. And so as this was all going down, he still wasn't making the call. And eventually it was Vice President Mike Pence who said, okay, call in the D.C. Guard. And, of course, it takes some time for all the off-duty officers to get there. And I'm pretty sure he's not even in the chain of command, so not totally sure how that happened. But there were a bunch of, like, communication errors. And just when you think about it, of, like, the severity of it, like, not a great time to have communication errors, guys. definitely. Of all times to have the Capitol.
Definitely. Formed. But there's one other thing that they also mentioned on the news that's really horrifying. All the bombs that they found.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
thanks for mentioning
they
that.
Had,
yeah,
you know, Molotov cocktails. They could have burned the Capitol down. You know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's a lot of. Thank you so much, Harry, for bringing up some points and, you know, going over a couple of points.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for your show.
No problem. Thank you. It is super imperative to, you know, to have these conversations about the chain of commands and what is actually, like, possible for each elected official or whatever position to do. And also, you know, interesting to point out that, you know, like Sonia was saying, it's not that there was a lack of intel or information. It was limited, and it wasn't by accident, you know. And Harry, I agree with you. How are you going to tell people to walk 2 miles and not march with them? Come on, it's 2 miles. You can do it. You know, that's kind of rude. But I think that we have another listener on the line. Is it Joseph?
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going?
No good. Despite all the craziness. What I wanted to know is, like, where did everybody park? Did they... Like, I know Portland parking is terrible. You know, you can't park anywhere close to where you want to go, and so you either have to park. I gotta, like, just stay at home and walk from my house to if I'm going to go downtown or something. It's just good. So these guys, like, take the bus or something? They carpool?
Very pragmatic question. I like that.
Get on the subway with automatic weapons? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you. That's a very pragmatic question.
Yeah,
I like that.
There was a Vice article that came out yesterday that was about how flight attendants want to basically kick any people who were there for the siege off of flights, like not let them fly out. I don't think that they can technically do that, but there definitely is, like, mobilization in terms of, like, how did you get here?
Bust it. There was a bunch of GoFundMes for this. So, like, another piece of intel telling you who, what, when, where, why. So people were on social media organizing and fundraising for buses to bus it to DC and for things like food, accommodation, like, you know, it wasn't local. I mean, there may have been, you know, a couple of locals, no doubt, but these weren't DC people, like maybe some Virginia mm-hmm. people, maybe some Maryland people, this isn't DC.
What the first like the night of when those first 13 arrests were made, the Capitol Police, or the, I think it was the Metro Police Chief, was saying none of these arrests are DC residents.
DC don't play.
Which
like
I feel
that.
Like you could have guessed if anybody saw DC's presidential vote margin. I think one would not be surprised by that.
Yeah,
and like 98% Biden.
For Obama, it was like in the 90% percentile too. I remember being in DC on the night that Obama was elected for the first time was electric. And on the line we have Boris. Are you there?
I am here.
How's it going?
Well, I have a pretty different take on the whole situation as opposed to what I've been hearing you people say.
People would love to hear what you got to say.
Regardless of whatever simple-minded motives the Trumpers might have had, and their leaders leading them by the nose to do whatever they did, and the fact that it looks to me like it was orchestrated, I'm excited. I'm excited because that very heavy door that the status quo resides behind so comfortably is rattling in its jam just a little bit right now. And I think that's a good thing. I think there's some energy that's flowing right now that if this was the typical, quote, orderly transition of power, unquote, wouldn't be there, wouldn't be in place. That excites me.
Can I Boris, can I ask you to be a little bit more specific? What kind of energy, like, to what end? What kind of energy do you think there is?
Well, I see this energy as being something that might kick the ass of people who are so inclined to be in denial about what this country really is. And I'm waiting with crossed fingers that this is going to inspire some kind of a real response from the serious left, and we're going to just get on with it at this point, as opposed to just going back in our cubbyholes and saying, okay, Biden's elected, everything's okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, so point taken there, Boris, but in the meantime, this will also inspire a lot of different kinds of energy, and people who aren't as fortunate as others by way of the color of their skin or their gender identity will be in the crosshairs of that different energy. So maybe that's a little less exciting for some people who, you know, aren't you.
Well, and there's another thing to point out there, that neo-Nazi accelerationists have been looking for the spark to the flame of the second civil war that they want to have. And they thought that it was going to be taking the Michigan governor's hostage. That happened a few months ago. And now they see this as an opportunity for them to incite a second civil war. So when you talk about these energies, I think it's important to be specific about what kind of energy we're talking about.
Yeah, and what exactly you want to, what exactly one would be advocating for, and what kind of price that will exact, and who exactly will pay it.
And I'm going to tell you this much, Boris, it's going to be people who look like me, buddy. Thank you so much for your super insightful input. I think that we have Marilyn on the line.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Yeah.
Hey, Marilyn, how's it going?
I would like to give enormous praise to Georgia for electing really two outstanding Democratic candidates over two really horrific, god-awful Republican candidates. And that gives me a lot of hope, and it also puts our power back into Senate, so we'll be able to do things like pass the stimulus and do the infrastructure, and that god-awful, horrible, rotten piece of excrement Mr. Mitch McConnell has been put in his place, and that causes me enormous joy. And I would like to also mention that the Republicans are funded by a lot of sleazy, rotten, crummy billionaires who are just greedy, sorry people, and that they have been given way too much power because they have so much money. And we have to ask, who is funding this, the right-wingers? And we know damn well who's doing it. It's Robert Mercer and Mr. Adelson and Betsy DeVos and that crowd. And so they got what they paid for. And also the domination of the media. You can't turn on. Did you see them smashing all the cameras and all of that?
Oh, yeah. It was, yeah.
You know what I thought of when I saw that? I thought of all the years and years of the people who work for those networks never once calling fascism on air. And
always, I've heard them do that.
And conflating BLM and anti-fascists with Proud Boys and 3% and, you know, the literal Nazis, and saying a whole bunch of both sidesism, and
we're not,
and saying that they're all the same
network.
Thing. So what we see there is all journalists are reaping the harvest sown by a few who are so afraid of appearing, quote, biased, unquote, against literal Nazis that they will not call them out for what they really are.
Okay, I have a lot of sympathy for that, but I don't totally agree with it. I think they are pulling their weight in a lot of cases, and that without the media and without their information that they give us, we would be in a lot darker place. But mm-hmm. the other media, the non-fact-based media, are the ones that are, and they are funded by billionaires also. They're the spawn of billionaires. And the reason
you bring a really good point about, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. I would like to hear that.
Kelly Loeffler is super wealthy, very, very, very wealthy. And we saw that even though she is a person of means, and even though it was a WNBA team, which didn't endorse her, she still lost. And it honestly, maybe I'm hopeful, maybe I'm just being silly, but it kind of made me feel like, well, I guess you can't necessarily buy your way into absolutely everything, because here we go, the people have spoken. And it, although she was completely out of touch and, you know, not even from Georgia, so there's a lot of factors, but it, you know, I feel like there was a little, maybe like a lesson to be learned there. And it, yeah, like you said, very, very proud of Georgia. You know, didn't even have to go purple, just went all in. And I appreciate you bringing the fact that there is a lot of money involved in all of this, and that's a big problem.
$14 billion. $14 billion was spent on this election, so that lets you gives you a clue.
Nutty.
Yeah,
that gives you a clue. They don't even have anything to show for it. So sad.
Exactly.
That's
right.
So
we
true.
Have.
Oh my God.
The worst. The worst government. We have the worst government money can buy, and that's Mr. Trump and his. And
to
his
reinvest.
Nazis.
Yeah.
I like that. That's tattoo worthy. I appreciate you so much for all your comments. And we do have another caller on the line. Tim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. For now.
How's it going,
anyway,
Tim?
I wanted to call up. I say the guy, what's his name, Horace, who was saying about how it makes him excited and thing. I think he's got a good point, because the left is so divided into a lot of different groups, it needs a sustaining thing to hold them together, to get them prepared, and to keep the focus on the issue. And, I mean, I don't like what happened, but in a way, it could strengthen the left, but you're also right, could galvanize, well, both sides, left and right, which is all the more reason why the left needs to get more organized now, because it's the right that has the armed camps and the training and the weapons and a lot of people with military background. If they come up against untrained civilians with no weapons and no preparation, guess who's going to win? Guess who's going to die?
I just don't understand how people can advocate for making militias. No. I understand like what you're talking about, but I just, if we want to organize and do all this stuff, like, why does it have to be around violence? Like, why can't it be around, I don't know, like teaching and like, you know, there are institutions, if they're rotten, we can rebuild them, but why, like, you know, just shoot the whole thing up, burn it all down? Like, that's just,
the thing is silly.
That's not even anarchy. That's just dumb.
The thing is, the fascists,
you just end up having,
oh,
go ahead, Tony.
Fascists are essentially cowards, and a well-organized and well-armed left that they see as ready to come at them or ready to fight them back will turn away from them and come after easier targets. And easier targets means me, and it means Tammy, and several other people who...
can't blend in.
Yeah.
I can't wear camouflage and go to the surplus army store saying that I'm not. I can't take this off. I can't.
So what you're advocating, Tim, what you and Boris are advocating, Tim, is putting us in the crosshairs of unhinged, violent psychopaths. And it's
like, y'all want to fight each other? Fight each other. Just do it in like a Thunderdome where the rest of society can be like, not have to deal with it. It's silly. And there's like, is this the like society you want your children to grow up in? Like, is this the society we're building? What is that? We're tearing down just a little bit of fabric that we have as a society, as a community, in these messed up times, and we want to shoot each other? Really?
But what I'm saying is, you're not prepared. You're going to get shot. I went to Chile. I was a Peace Corps in Paraguay. I went to Chile during the Pinochet regime to see what it was like under a fascist dictatorship. You do not want to be in this country if that's what happens. The people of Chile were...
So then, Tim, why are you talking about creating what will bring that about instead of, say, like, organizing to make it impossible for that kind of power to be concentrated in that kind of hands?
That we should be doing that. The first one.
Okay, then. Thank you.
If we cannot do that, if we every other day there's a shooting because people are shooting each other, and what is it? Violence begets violence, and then it's going to be civilian violence and then government violence, which we've been seeing. Like, people die. We don't understand what, like, seeing a dying body is, and what that people, when they die in the battlefield, don't think of democracy as the last thing. They think of their families, and they think of the future, and they think of all the stuff that they'll miss, they'll never see again. They think of all of this while they have the taste of copper and seeping through their mouths. So if you think that to bring that to a country where people get asylum you're nuts, you're crazy. And like, that's not what KBOO is about. That's not what I'm about. That's not like that type of stuff will never, like, I'm not a pacifist, but I hate violence, and it makes no sense to try to bring it to a country that has like is trying so hard to
that has more
rebuild.
That has more firearms than people.
It's a slippery slope, and it's not.
If we've learned anything, you know, from this, it's that democracy is fragile, and that you can't put your head in the sand about what it means to protect it, you know, and that it is an endeavor that is worth continuing to do because it is something that keeps us out of, you know, violence in that way, and that it can be rebuilt. You know, I think if there is one thing that, you know, because if you remember, all of like senators and representatives were very determined that even in that day when they had been chased out of their place of work, where they're doing a ceremonial vote, a vote that actually doesn't have impact on things. They were chased out of their place of work, but they were determined that they needed to go and be seen finishing the work that evening. And they did that. I think if there is one thing that, like, you know, unites Americans of all stripes, is like the refusal to be cowed, you know, will not be, you know, shamed or hidden by in the face of adversity.
Go ahead.
No, please.
Another thing, the Congress couldn't have even done anything. Even when Pence was reading the electoral votes he couldn't change anything. So the fact that people thought that he could goes to show you that maybe you can combat these people with education.
Civics lesson.
Yeah, civic lessons for everyone. Civics for all. We have 2 minutes left on the clock. We have one more caller. Caller, can you make that your question or comment in 1 minute?
Yes, and thank you. And war is obsolete, and so is violence. Anyway, I'd like to thank Stacey Abrams in Georgia and all the people like her that went door to door to get people to vote in Georgia. So Stacey Abrams should have a major role in government, but she won't because she's too good. And anyway, thank you for all the good comments and lessons, education, and maybe if some of the people, or maybe most of the people that were protesting or rioting, if they had good jobs, well-paying jobs, and the best possible education, maybe they wouldn't be in the position to listen to a man like Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Annalise.
Thank you.
And I'd like to piggyback on what Annalise was saying, is that it was our failure. I'm speaking to my fellow whites, especially my fellow white women, to properly reckon with whiteness and its toxic legacy that made LaTosha Brown and Stacey Abrams and all the other organizers and politicians in Georgia and in Alabama, remember Roy Moore, that made all their heroism necessary. So saying thank you is all well and good, but we got to do a whole lot more.
Thank you for that. I agree. And, you know, I think Stacey Abrams is too, maybe, I think that there's going to be a bright future. There's going to be a bright future for all of us. We just can't all be killing each other, because then there'll be no future left. Duh. Mm-hmm. And on that brilliant note, I think I'm going to, don't kill each other.
Cut it off. Yeah, we're going to run out of time. Thank you for listening to The Gap, everyone. KBOO Portland. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934.